This is Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter, and this is a chat with Danae Mercer, whose story is fascinating because of her experience of going viral on social media from a few thousand followers to over a million followers, now 2 million followers. And then came the backlash. Have a listen.
I absolutely did get backlash, absolutely. And I knew I would. I posted it knowing it was going to upset some people, that I would lose followers.
So we talk about that, and we also talk about this.
We don't have to punish ourselves. We don't have to hurt ourselves. And that might be in the form of skipping a meal or binge eating or going out for a 5-hour run when our body is saying, relax, rest, recover. And so for me, it always comes back to that respect. Like, okay, I might not want to stare in the mirror today, but I'm still going to eat. I'm still going to do what feels good for my skin. And tomorrow we'll revisit how I'm feeling.
And you may be surprised to hear what this is about.
She is exploring her passion for her bisexuality.
So pull up a chair, hit play while you're in the car, on the beach, doing the dishes. This is a fascinating conversation. You're listening to Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter. Speaking of socials, do follow Sophie as well. You can find her on Insta and on TikTok at Dr. Sophie Schotter. So Danae Mercer is a writer, a journalist, a former magazine editor, a wife, mother, a friend, many other things besides. She's also an eating disorder survivor, a prolific content creator, an author, and a woman on a mission. Because having exposed not only the tricks and hacks that many people use to contort their bodies on social media images, just before the pandemic hit, Danae took the step to expose her own body, cellulite and all, and then she pretty much broke the internet. The post went viral, her network expanded exponentially, and it's fair to say that women everywhere were so grateful. Over 2.4 million followers later, Danae is now not only one of the world's biggest social media superstars, she's also one of the most powerful advocates for body positivity. Her content is liked, loved, and followed by all kinds of people, from global celebrities to everyday women, men, boys, and girls. In short, Danae is on a mission to showcase the reality behind carefully curated social media snaps while encouraging all of us to embrace ourselves for who we are. Danae is originally from California and now lives in Florence with her husband, affectionately known as the Italian, and her young daughter. You can find her on socials at Danae Mercer, Danae spelled D-A-N-A-E, as well as on her website, DanaeMercer.com, where you can catch links to her own podcast. And by the way, you can also buy her fabulous book, A Long Ride Home, which is a fascinating biography of the athlete Charlotte Roach. So from Dr. Sophie and from me, welcome to Age Well, Danae.
Hi, well, that was a really beautiful introduction. Thank you.
So, Danae, you went viral as we went into COVID. Can you talk us through the post that did it, plus where you were emotionally in the build-up to that? A lot of people have described you as brave, but were you feeling brave? And I guess also what happened in the first 12, 24 hours after that post went live and really took off. Did you realize what was going to happen? And what did your friends and family make of all of it?
I didn't realize at all what was going to happen. I think for a lot of people, when you go viral, it's just about luck, right? It's being at the right place, the right time, with kind of the right message. And it was never anything I set out to do. You know, I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go make some viral content. With COVID, I was living in Dubai at the time, and we were basically locked in our flats for 6 weeks. And I was in quite a small 2-bedroom apartment. I had a roommate. We had a balcony. And so overnight, I had the chance to just really focus on things that I wanted to talk about. I had no work. Everything was shut down. I was stuck in my house. So it gave me the chance to talk about body image and mental health and a lot of the stuff that was really on my heart, on my mind. And then one of my posts, it was a post where I was posing in a swimsuit with certain lighting and in certain angles. I can make my body look very IG friendly, you know, like an IG baddie. So booty here and waist there and just very, all of it popping. And then in other angles, you can see my very real cellulite and stretch marks and dimples and what I actually looked like. So I did a pose that was both those things together. It was a side-by-side of me posed versus relaxed. I think because it was COVID, we all were locked in our houses. Nothing was happening. It went viral. And in the span of a week or 2 weeks, I was on, probably would have been over 200 media outlets. I was doing like Fox News and Good Morning America. And like any, if you name the big shows in the UK or Australia or anywhere. So it was just like, it was just this crazy whirlwind of, you know, the right place, the right time. And I shot up from about 70,000 followers to over a million within a couple of weeks. And, you know, it was, if I'm really, really, really honest, and I feel comfortable talking about this now, but it was so awful for my mental health. It was so upsetting, really, because you go from a very protected community, like kind of your community that have been with you for years, that kind of know you, you know them, to all these strangers on the internet suddenly saying the most horrific things about your body, about who you are, about your character, about, and it's very startling. I had never experienced that before. And it was like high school bullying on a massive scale from a lot of angry men commenting about my body. And so it's like, oh my gosh, what is this? It was also during COVID. So you're very removed from the real world. It wasn't that I could go out with friends and have a drink and be like, oh, wait a second, this is real life. It's like, oh, no, these people hate me and I'm awful and I'm horrible and I'm disgusting. And it was very intense.
Yeah, that's so interesting because I think in researching you, a lot of the focus has been on your exponential rise to the profile that you have now. And there's not much emphasis on actually, yes, there's equity in building up followers, but also what you gained there, obviously you lost. And actually, I'm really sorry because there hasn't been much focus on that. That must have been hard. So I think for both of us, thank you for being honest enough to share that side of your story. I listened to an interview you did on the Reinvention podcast and you relayed a really interesting story about a well-known yoga brand who dropped you as soon as you moved into this body transparency space. And you very generously didn't name the brand, but can you just rearticulate that story for us? And did that happen a lot at first?
It wasn't so much a yoga brand. It was more of a like underwear fashion brand, but you're right. I don't want to name them, but it definitely did happen. It definitely did happen. And I get it because cellulite and stretch marks and wiggles and dimples, it's not for every brand. There are certain brands that think, okay, we want to be like what is quote unquote traditionally sexy. We want to present ourselves as that. And oh, Danae Mercer does not fit that. So, and I do remember it was because they were hosting a yoga event and it was the sort of thing that I would have been invited to in the past. One of my friends was the teacher for the event. And I remember everyone that I knew was going. And it felt, again, it felt very high school where you were like, oh, I haven't been invited. And, oh, okay, this is happening now. But on the flip side, I do think it's like a bad relationship, right? Like you get rid of what's not right for you and you open the door to what is.
Yeah. Sophie, kind of a question for you about Danae. I know that you both met on holiday in the Maldives. Can you describe to listeners why you find Danae's content so powerful?
Yeah. So actually, before that holiday, I hadn't come across Danae. And I actually met Danae's husband, the Italian, first, and then met Danae afterwards. And for me, your content is just so honest. You're not trying, as so many people are, to paint this perfect picture. You're also not being overly negative. You share your highs and you share your lows, whether that's through your fertility journey or through empowering women. And there was one post you did not long ago where you said, age 16, I hate my body. Age 24, I hate my body. I wish like I looked like I did at 16, and on and on and on. And I'm sure that resonates with so many people, and it certainly does with me. And for me, it's only over the last few years that something really clicked, that actually, as you say on your post, it's never been about your body. And you just capture what I think is so many women's experience of life and their relationship with themselves. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I also love the fact that you've talked quite a bit about this entrenched misogyny in women's healthcare. There was one post you did, it was only last year, 2023, that researchers tested period products using actual blood as opposed to water.
Shocker.
Exactly. And alongside that, pointed out that typically endometriosis takes about 10 years to be diagnosed. IUDs are fitted without pain relief. And medicinal research is done almost exclusively on men because the female menstrual cycle feels too complex. And the list goes on. Could you talk a bit more about that?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's something I'm really passionate about, especially as a woman who now is looking back on her teen years or her younger years, thinking, why didn't I know this? You know, I was prescribed birth control when I was, 13? Because I had really bad periods, incredibly bad periods. And then I had my own fertility struggles and this and that. I'm not saying they're linked, but I'm saying this is stuff that we should know about. We should have conversations around. I read a really interesting stat the other day in this incredible book. I recommend it to every listener. It's called Eve, like In the Garden of Eve. Mm-hmm. And it's this incredible book about the female body through time. And one of the points they make is it wasn't until, I think, 1996, 1997, that doctors thought to test anesthesia on women. And what they found is even when you control for our weight, our size, like a different physical differences. So you match us to a man exactly. Female and a man are exactly the same. Even when you control for that, women still wake up from anesthesia a lot faster. So that the implications of this mean for however long, for all of the years, women could have been waking up from surgery when they should have still been under, because all the studies have been tested on men. And like, that's just one of, you know, 100,000 examples of these sorts of things. So it blows my mind.
And we're only just talking about it, aren't we? This entrenched misogyny in healthcare. And I also think it's important to think about, and this is a trickier conversation as women, our own entrenched misogyny, because we've been culturally raised in a certain way that we can be misogynist. It sounds like a contradiction, but women can be misogynist without even realizing it because we're so darn used to this being the case.
I think it also, it's part of it is so, you said it's so deeply entrenched, and I absolutely agree. And I would challenge women to, if we are struggling with pain, right? If our stomach is agonizing, if we're exhausted, if we're, maybe we need to question, do we really need to push through? Would we ask a man who is like in agony in his tummy to go to work? Would we ask that? Would that be expected? Is that acceptable? Or, I mean, look at, there's some really interesting stuff around the male IUD versus the female IUD. And the male IUD, they have like strong painkillers and pain relief. And the female IUD, they're like, well, it's just a pinch. No, it's not just a pinch. And so I love that women are talking about this because the more of our voices rise up against this nonsense, the quicker change will happen.
Bringing it back to one of your posts, I love your, one of your posts said, your goal weight is not always your healthy weight. And even if someone doesn't love their body, you want them to at least respect their body. And I think for so many women, this is a lifetime's work, largely because, again, we've been so culturally conditioned to look a certain way. And if we add any kind of trauma or abuse into the mix, obviously it becomes harder. As someone who's in recovery from an eating disorder, how challenging is it for you to either love or respect your body? Is it a daily practice, or do you feel like you've won that one now?
I don't think any woman in this world could ever win that one. I saw a video with where Margot Robbie was being interviewed. And the interviewer asked her, oh, do you feel sexy? And she's like, no, not when I'm myself. I don't, when I can play sexy characters, but I'm not sexy. And then there was one with Audrey Hepburn, and she was saying, oh, you know, I wish I had a better figure. I wish my nose was smaller. I wish, these are some of the world's most mechanically beautiful women who are picking themselves apart. And so for me, I would say it is absolutely a daily practice every single day. And some days I am stronger than others. Some days I feel more confident in my skin. Some days it's better I just avoid mirrors, or I don't dwell on how my body looks. But I think the reason I focus on respect is no matter how we feel when we wake up, no matter how we feel throughout the day, we don't have to punish ourselves. We don't have to hurt ourselves. And that might be in the form of skipping a meal or binge eating or going out for a 5-hour run when our body is saying relax, rest, recover. And so for me, it always comes back to that respect. Like, okay, I might not want to stare in the mirror today, but I'm still going to eat. I'm still going to do what feels good for my skin. And tomorrow we'll revisit how I'm feeling.
Yeah, I was reading a wonderful interview with somebody that was talking about the fact that if we go into that state of mind where we are not loving ourselves and not wanting to look in the mirror naked, and a lot of women don't do that. A lot of my girlfriends have revealed to me that they don't do that. Often it's a case of being in our adult selves and saying to ourselves, I'm going to take care of you today, because we're speaking to the child in us that feels quite traumatized or afraid. Sophie, I wondered whether you, because of what you do and who you are, you ever feel the pressure to look quote unquote good all the time, and are you allowed to have an off day?
Do you know, I do, for sure. And my audience is much smaller than Danae's. But even then, I've had situations where I've been recognized and approached or then subsequently messaged on my social media by people who have seen me in random situations. It might be on my way to work. It might be getting out of a taxi. And then there's obviously all the time when I go to the gym. So I am aware of it. But when I go to the gym, I don't put on a full face of makeup. Take me as I am. But for me, it's more little things like, since my job is also related to looking and feeling our best, I am mindful of, for example, making sure my nails never look scratty. My hair is always done well. I don't have big roots. It's little things that I feel like, because I also do want to look after myself. So it's those sorts of things I am aware of. I don't necessarily see it as a negative, but it's definitely something I've become much more conscious of. Fee and I, we did a really interesting episode on the emotions around having aesthetic treatments and whether, for example, you can be a feminist and have aesthetic treatments done. And of course, the answer to that is absolutely yes. Earlier this year, you posted about having had some aesthetic treatments, and I love that transparency. Again, I think it's woefully lacking in a lot of people and in a lot of social media accounts. Did you get any backlash from that? And why did you decide to do that and be honest about it?
I absolutely did get backlash. Absolutely. And I knew I would. I posted it knowing it was going to upset some people, that I would lose followers. But I think increasingly for me, existing in this space, as someone who's worked in magazines, as someone who's now in like the influencer world, you so rarely see people be transparent about what they have done to their face, right? Like, we have moved into a space where people are being really honest or more honest about their bodies, and it feels, that feels okay. But then their faces, they just don't talk about it. And I think the result, for me, the result is that your average woman will look at social media and, again, compare herself and not understand, because if no one is talking about it, how does your average woman know that this is going on? And this happens with celebrities, it happens with influencers, it happens massively with self-love influencers. And so I think I was just feeling more and more compelled to be transparent, even knowing that it would upset some people. I would rather those people are upset, yet they know what's happening. Mm. I'd rather that there is that education. And I've always come at things from a stance of no judgment. Like, I think women are shamed in so many ways for everything we do. I don't want to add to that. So whether you pose or you don't pose, whether you, I don't know, get your nails done or you don't get your nails done. What, I love the freedom of choice for what empowers each individual woman. So my goal with that post was just to help educate.
And I think the tide is turning. I know I listened to a great podcast with the author Marion Keyes, and she spoke brilliantly about this. She posted a photograph of herself and people going, oh gosh, you look amazing. What face creams are you using? And she said she suddenly felt really uncomfortable not saying that actually she was having, I think she has Botox and fillers and skin boosters. And she felt really uncomfortable just not saying that. So she did. But she was very casual about it. And there's been even Caitlin Moran, the feminist writer, who decided, I think, three or four years ago to start having Botox. She's spoken about it. Jimmy Carr, the comedian, he's spoken about it. So there are, I think the tide is now changing with people saying, yeah, I do this and I'm okay with it. So that's encouraging. I have a question for you both. Danae, your Insta feed is so compelling and yet challenging in all the right ways. Earlier on this year, you posted a question, which was, when was the first time somebody commented on your body? And then you posted some of the responses, which I found really powerful. So it was my mum, my dad, a teacher, a first boyfriend. So I just wondered for both of you, Sophie as well, can you recall the first time that somebody talked about your body in any way?
I can, for sure.
Okay.
And I think I was in my first year of primary school, so I was 4 or 5. And I was just a really normal sized child. And I was told I looked 6 months pregnant. What the person was trying to say wasn't, "Sophie, you're fat," because I wasn't. They were trying to say, "Sophie, your posture's not good." But they said it in a way, and that was repeated a couple of times within a relatively short space of time. And that was the first of many. But again, as I said, it wasn't coming from a place where someone was trying to body shame me. But absolutely, the fact I can still remember it now means it did have an impact on me.
Mm. Yeah, you metabolized that one. What about you, Danae?
Oh, that makes me, I'm so angry for you, because I think these things, I'm trying to teach my husband now as like an Italian male he's a little bit older than me. And it's just such a different generation. Like, he doesn't understand that little comments, especially now we have a daughter. I'm like, you have to be so careful because the world women grow up in, we internalize these things so much. I remember, like, I think one of the earliest ones, and I must have been, it was since I was probably like 3 or 4 or 5, there was a joke that my mom would tell me that she had tried at one point to like put me in ballet. And the teacher very quickly, we were in California at the time, and the teacher very quickly was like, "No, your daughter is never going to make it in this industry as a, 3-year-old, 4-year-old. She's too tall." And it's funny because it's something my husband has brought to my attention. In a lot of photos with other women, I will hunch, I will crouch, I will bend forward. And he's always like, "Just be proud of your height, proud of how you stand." But these little things, they stick with you, don't they?
They do. My mom, I remember the first time I put on makeup, playing around at age 12, my mom went, "You look really great." And then every time thereafter, she went, "Put on some makeup, put on some makeup." And for a long time, I did all the time. I thought that's how I look best, with a load of makeup. These things, they do stick. They really do stick.
It's an interesting one because I can probably go through my life from then up until much more recently. And there came a point where I just actually said, "Look, my appearance isn't the most important thing about me."
With my daughter, it's something, I think she is a radiant baby. I think she has very striking blue eyes. And it's something now I see quite a lot. People are like, "Oh, you know, such a beautiful baby, such a pretty baby, so pretty, so beautiful." And it's something I quite deliberately now, I'm like, wait a second. I don't want that to be her first compliment. I want her to know that she's strong, that she's smart, that she's brave, that she can do incredible things. And it's funny how you have to really deliberately change those words, right? You have to really think about it, especially with women and girls.
Yeah. So, Danae, as I said, I actually met your husband, Nico, before I met you. We went diving together. And one thing I wanted to say is that I was really struck by how he spoke about you. And he's clearly a feminist too. How does that feel?
Look, he is the most supportive partner. I remember my relationship before Nico, actually, which was a very nice, a very healthy relationship. But the partner at the time, it was before I even did a lot with like cellulite or body positivity or that sort of thing. And he was so uncomfortable with it. He was so uncomfortable with it, like almost embarrassed of it, that I would be talking about these like feminist things in public. And I think one of the really beautiful things with Nico is he is my biggest cheerleader in a way. He's my biggest fan. And I think he's also very stable and grounding, right? Like, he supports what I do. He's really passionate about it. But also he helps me find a calmness that I think social media can often snatch away. And, you know, he's like my lighthouse. So he's a keeper. I mean, I would marry him.
Good.
So I guess changing direction slightly, a lot of people know about filters, but they've got much less of an idea about some of the newer filters and Photoshop style techniques. And I guess at the extreme end of this, something you've spoken a lot about recently, but these AI influencers who don't even exist. Do you feel that there should be stricter protocols on social media where people have to declare that they've used any kind of filter technology, or indeed that this person is not real, and using maybe mental health data as a justification for that?
I absolutely think with AI, we need to be really incredibly strict, because AI is changing things so rapidly. I mean, you now have these artificial women that don't exist but look like real women but have disturbing qualities. Like there's one I came across a couple months ago who she looks almost like a young Kate Moss in her body. So very waif, very delicate body, a very young looking face. But then she has in her bio written by, it's a man behind the account. In her bio, it says that she is pure and innocent and naive and delicate, but she is exploring her passion for her bisexuality. And so it is presented like a real woman, but it's almost like the sexualization of a child, basically, in this particular instance. So things like that, I think we need to be really aware, really informed about what is happening with AI, and tech platforms 1,000% have a responsibility to force creators, brands, companies to declare what is AI. I think it's far more dangerous than a body filter, or you've suddenly jumped from what is constrained by like some element of reality, right? Like if I were to take my body and edit this and adjust that, there is still, it is still some basis of reality into these possibly perfect looking women and girls that are being used by a lot of men to make money. And often they're over-sexualized. So it makes me so angry, and it really worries me.
It's so extreme, it's almost unimaginable, but it's happening. Really shocking.
Well, and that's a lot of these AI models have, it's kind of like a version of OnlyFans. They have OnlyFans, but maybe not that platform. You know, accounts where you can pay to get more exclusive content with them. And some of them have over 200,000 followers. And that in itself is horrific. But what really concerns me is for today's teenager, social clout is currency. Mm-hmm. They look at these AI influencers, right, who are perfect beyond perfect. They're perfect because they're not real. And they see these women succeeding, these women getting social clout. What is that going to do to the teenager's mental health? What unrealistic standard are we out there creating? And how dare the men behind it, how dare they?
It's almost like social media has been used as a conduit for the quote-unquote perfect male fantasy, and it's so irresponsible. And I didn't know, and most teenagers probably won't know, and it's scary. And there should, I think we all believe there should be more legislation. There should be legislation. There are a host of other influencers being honest about how manipulated social media is. One of these is Alex Light, and I love the comment that she once made, which is, nobody at your funeral is going to stand up and say she had a small waist and a great thigh gap, which just puts it in perspective. So another question for both of you, if you're having a bad day body image wise, what do you do to boost your self-esteem? Are there any like little hacks that might help other people listening that is a very quick, oh, okay, I'm back with me again?
Ironically, I turn off social media. I think even the best curated feeds can be, we know what social media does to our brains most of the time. Like I step away from my phone and I do something I really love. So for me, often at the moment, it's going for like a little jog, a little run, moving my body. I do a Disney dance party with my baby. Her idea of dancing at the moment is just sitting in my arms and letting me run around like a silly chicken. But it's a way to celebrate what my body allows me to do. You know, I can run, I can move, I can dance, I can wiggle without worrying about how I look. And I think that's so important.
Yeah. So yeah. What about you?
And for me, I make sure that day I pick something to wear that I know I feel great in. And then I just try and there's an amazing meditation that I do, which is about falling into love with your body. And it's not about appearance. It's about your body as your vessel in so many ways. And I try and switch my thinking around to being a place of gratitude for all the amazing things my body allows me to do, its strength and how it carries me through such a busy and often challenging life. And I actually find that just staying in that space for a relatively short amount of time makes my day much more pleasant to get through if I've woken up feeling in a bad place about my appearance.
Is that a Joe Dispenza meditation?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it might be.
It's not a long one, actually. It's only about 25 minutes or so, but just re-centers me on the fact our body is designed to do amazing things. How it looks is secondary.
Yeah. I'm just going to actually share what I do, just because it might help other people listening, which is I actually do the opposite of what I want to do, which is I look in the mirror naked. Because often if you're having a bad day, you want to avoid mirrors. But I look in the mirror naked and I thank my body. I think especially having come through breast cancer. And I think for anyone who's gone through any journey, it might be cancer, it might be abuse, it might be trauma, it might be anything. But to kind of thank your body and go, hey, we did it. We got there. And that's what I do.
Danae, you talked a little bit there also, just touched on it about, because you did a great post about curating your social media feed and how to stay on top of what the algorithms try to serve you up. So, for example, things like weight loss ads. And I wondered how you and Nico are approaching raising a daughter in, I know she's still 17 months or so at the moment at the time we record, so she's still very young. But in this social media age, is there anything you're already doing and bearing in mind?
Oh, it's tricky. It's so tricky. It's something I think about on a daily basis. Like, I've just listened to, it's an incredible podcast. I think his name is Dr. Nass. My friend sent it to me, actually, but I'm going to subscribe to him now. But he was interviewing an expert on child development, and they were talking about the studies that they have done, the studies looking at children on social media and children with access to iPhones at a young age, which is happening increasingly younger and younger. And then also the difference between young boys and young girls in terms of their mental health and their development when they can access iPhones. It's like an hour-long podcast. I won't even try to summarize it here. But one of my big takeaways was like, oh my gosh, we have to be so careful with these devices for our children, for ourselves. At the moment, thank goodness, she's still little, so I don't have to make that decision. But I'm learning. I'm trying to learn as much as I can and educate myself as much as I can so that when she does come to me and says, Mommy, all my friends have iPhones. I want an iPhone. I want an Instagram account. I want social media. I'll be more prepared with the answer that feels right for our family.
I tell you what else is quite interesting for me as a mother of two daughters and a son is I think I've always over-indexed on being really positive with my daughters for obvious reasons, for all the reasons we've discussed. And I think, oh, have I done as well with my son? So I'm trying really hard at the moment to sort of check in with him emotionally so that I don't forget him and his needs. And again, it's that entrenched sexism where, you know, men have to be quote unquote strong. So I have to catch myself on that one. So I thought I'd throw that one into the mix. Danae, the other thing as well that we both wanted to ask you is, are you as obsessive about nutritional supplements as we are? And just generally, like, what's your daily wellness and age well routine? Again, supplements, but also any biohacking, any devices, like you mentioned a podcast, anything at all that you do, we'd love to know.
Well, I do really love podcasts. I really love them because I can usually put in like one ear pod and then run around with my daughter. So that helps. Supplements, look, I know like wellness influencers are really into supplements. I'm always just a little cautious, a little skeptical, especially given my journalist background, because you see how much money is behind that industry. Mm. But that having been said, I did a blood analysis some months ago in Austria with a company I really trust. And their nutritionist doctor, who's just like a genius, was basically like, all right, so this could impact for me, it was fertility. And he was like, this could impact, this low number here could also impact your body's ability to grow certain cells. And of course, we're all like, house plants. Of course, there are certain nutrients and supplements that our bodies uniquely need to be doing better. So I've recently started taking a prenatal vitamin again, just to help get in all those good things. And ashwagandha, because apparently it's supposed to be good for you and for fertility. And I've got it's a Women's Best like super green smoothie powder. And so I've been taking that with, it's got like 50 dried fruits and vegetables. And then they have a collagen supplement too. And after baby, my nails are just, my hair and my nails, I'm like, everything's just falling apart. So I'm throwing in some collagen because, I don't know, maybe it will give me the magic nails of a goddess. So I'm sorry. And then you're like, what are your biohacking secrets? And here I am being like, well, I don't really know. I'm just trying this stuff.
Which collagen supplement do you use out of interest? Can you remember?
It's the Women's Best one. It's like a bone broth supplement, and it has no flavor. So I mix it with the greens and I take it like a shot. I kind of hold my breath and down it, and it doesn't taste bad.
I think with so much of this, it's trial and error. It's about finding what works for you and what your body needs. And that is different between all of us. There's relatively little that everyone needs, and virtually nothing that everyone needs in exactly the same amount.
Do you take any gut health supplements, Danae, probiotics?
Not yet, but that's part of what I'm hoping the greens will achieve, because they have some like good gut bacteria that is meant to be beneficial. I know it can work. I feel like I need to educate myself more about that.
We're recording a few episodes out of sequence. So we've already recorded with Zoe's Dr. Will Balsowitz, who was astonishingly good. So we'll send you a preview of that, I think, Sophie, shall we? Because his ethos I found life-changing. And also, Danae, the test that you mentioned, you don't have to disclose it, but was it the Dutch test by any chance?
It was at a clinic in Austria. I can send you the name. Mm. Basically, they're the nutritionist doctor behind Women's Best, who I work, you know, I've been an ambassador for years. And so he has like a separate clinic, but he's a consultant for them. So it was his clinic. I thought they would take just like one vial of blood. They took like nine. And then I went on to host a fitness and wellness event all day. By the end of it, I think I was like smelling color. It was great.
Sounds like you're doing a lot of the right thing. It sounds like Danae's really on a good path. But I guess it's a lot of it's anti-stress as well, isn't it?
For sure. Stress is a huge one.
Yeah. Well, from me, thank you so much, Danae.
And from me as well.
No, and thank you so much for having me on. It's been really great talking to you guys.
That ends our podcast. If you want to explore more of what we talked about, simply head to the show notes. We've done all of the research and noting down of names, ideas, any studies we mentioned, so you don't have to go digging. To be ahead of the latest episode, press follow on Apple Podcasts. That's the little cross on the top right. Or simply hit follow on Spotify or whichever podcast app you use. Also, do follow Sophie on Instagram and TikTok. There's loads of great content and little explainers on there. Search for Dr. Sophie Schotter. Finally, if you're close to London or Kent, you can book a consultation with Sophie and find out more about who she is and the range of treatments and services she offers via drsophieschotter.com. And by the way, there's some great blog content on the website too. My name's Fiona Mattesini. On behalf of myself and Sophie, please do take a moment to rate and review the show. It all helps. And of course, thanks for listening. Thank you.